Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I love working with Rossi every day. That's a ridiculous prognostication. You know, it's fun to come in and see him every day knowing that, like, you walk in here knowing that the players have total respect for him. You know, he and the coaching staff are incredibly well prepared. I thought that was one of the best spring trainings I've been a part of in terms of getting guys the right amount of work. You know, the preparation was excellent. You could hear the talk of how guys were improving, whether it was, you know, pitchers with their pitch mix or, you know, hitters working on the right things. So it was fun to watch, for me to watch him in his first real spring training and do such an amazing job. So I'm lucky, the Cubs are lucky that we have him.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mark Grody in for Mully today. That was Jed Hoyer, the Cubs team president, holding court before the season opener on Thursday at Wrigley Field. He was in the dugout. We were gathered around Jed. Had a good conversation yesterday, Mark, when on our show, 8 o'clock, and Jed elaborated on some things during his time with the Cubs media. And one of the first questions was about his feelings about David Ross. Gordon Whitmeyer asked him the question that he was responding to there. And when he called it a ridiculous notion, it was in reference to somebody in a story about managers who would be on the hot seat, maybe the first likely to be fired. One person mentioned David Ross. And so Gordon asked Jed about that possibility. And Jed responded in the way that you just heard, because I think it typifies and reflects the overall organizational confidence that remains very strong in Rossi. And you see him coming to into this season and driving to the ballpark yesterday, his interview with Ron Coomer on the pregame show, talking about butterflies. He still gets them, but I still think he feels like he is more ready for this role now more than ever, growing on the job and becoming an asset for the Cubs as a manager.
David Ross was put in a position to win once. This is his fourth year as the Cubs manager, if you can believe that. But 2020, pandemic year, was the 34-26 season, where obviously there was a nice decrescendo and fadeaway at the end of the season, as that's the way things were going, where you still had the horses. It was nice yesterday to see a $177 million player, Dansby Swanson, be maybe the best hitter on the day. Because remember last year when I think it was the Cubs playing the Dodgers, and David Ross was actually making comments about how much money that team was worth, you know, and almost saying,
right,
hey,
right,
give me some of that. So he got some of that. You put Dansby Swanson in there, 3-for-4. We've been talking about him all morning. Eric Hosmer over at first base makes an incredible play in the ninth inning, just a terrific scoop. So you saw things like the Trey Mancini 2-out RBI single in this game. So you're starting to see him have the right pieces, and for a day, all the right moves out of the bullpen as well. So,
well, let's face it, they're going to have to manufacture runs, Mark. I mean, they're going to have to find ways to take advantage of the larger bases and the increased tempo and maybe a more emphasis on speed on the base path. They're going to have to find ways to do things that create offense for a team that lacks power in the middle of the order. There isn't that guy that you can look at and say automatically, oh, yeah, there's 30 homers there.
Speaking of, do you think Cody Bellinger can do that or will do that? Do you
think he can.
But
Mark, what gives you any reason to believe the last 2 years that he will?
Nothing, because I watched him. Was his swing supposed to change? Because I saw the cuts that he was taking, in his first at-bat at least, where he was taking the full uppercut, Cody Bellinger, like, hey, if he's going back to maybe the way he was comfortable, I don't know, but I certainly saw a guy that didn't look like he was making adjustments at the plate.
I think that's fair, and that's one day, and we don't want to overreact. That could have been your best overreaction, that Cody Bellinger will be a bust.
I didn't say he's going to be a bust. I saw the Cody Bellinger that I've been seeing with the Dodgers for the – quite frankly, he swung like that in his MVP year as well.
Well, he might be one of those guys that Bruce believes that the Cubs have a better option at Iowa than they do in Chicago because –
PCA?
I don't think PCA is better than Cody Bellinger yet.
Oh, PCA.
But he's on the way.
Yeah.
But I'm not.
What about your guy, Christopher Morel? Are you guys, by the way, are you guys mad that Christopher Morel was not up there and Master Boney was?
I mean, I was a little disappointed in that.
Yeah.
They all's well that ends well.
You and Bernstein.
They won the
love
first
him.
Game. Yeah. I do love Christopher Morel. I like the way that he changes the temperature in the room. I think his versatility is valuable. But I understand what Jed Hoyer was saying, and the baseball people with the Cubs believe Christopher Morel playing every day at Iowa will make them a better baseball team
in
Chicago.
I love it.
Throughout the course of the season.
I love it. Because of watching this team as closely as we all have over the last few, even when all those prospects were coming up, they were also going back to the minors, like Schwarber, Ian Happ, even Javier Baez back in the day.
Javier Baez, and that was pointed out again yesterday. It also reflects that growing confidence in David Ross, the fact that he is a guy that will push the right buttons, put the people in the right spots, and frankly, work with management, hand in hand, collaboration, if you will, to use a Bears term for you, to collaboration with Jed and Carter Hawkins and the analytics department to put the people in the right spots at the right time. And David Ross, to his credit, you know, this week of all the stuff that was written about him coming in, I thought the story by Maddie Lee in the Sun-Times was as good as anything. Talking about changing his perspective. They used an anecdote about teaching his daughter how to drive and having a little bit of a mishap and then having the perspective that you gain from these kinds of setbacks. And David Ross now, you know, as a veteran manager, more equipped to handle some of the bad days, not overreacting to things on small sample sizes. And let's face it, you know, that perspective is going to be needed and the pressure is going to be increased. They spent over $300 million on free agents. So the guys that you reference, Bellinger, Mancini, Jameson Taillon, who pitches tomorrow, these are going to be guys that are going to come through and put more pressure on David Ross to win now.
That's a great point.
And so I think he's equipped to handle it. And it also, I would put that in the context of the external, broader perspective of the Cubs and David Ross, which we got a glimpse of from, you remember Jake Peavy, the former White Sox pitcher?
Of course.
He's now on the MLB Network. He's got some strong opinions, and he expressed this one about David Ross.
Well, we're asked for bold predictions. My bold prediction is they're going to build a statue to the one David Ross outside Wrigleyville at some point in the near future. And here's why. Dansby Swanson sign, Trey Mancini sign, Eric Hosmer, their culture is now building for a good thing to happen in Chicago, just like it happened back in 2016 when these guys punched their ticket and they carried that Rossy guy off the field. He now gets to take this elderly group with a lot of young talent and mesh something special together. The Chicago Cubs will contend this year, if not slip in the playoffs and build towards a next World Series championship in the near future.
Jake Peavy on the MLB Network.
You didn't mean that, Jake.
You don't think? Well, he didn't mean the part about the statue. That's hyperbole.
Well, no, actually, I thought about it. If David Ross was to win as a manager of the Chicago, I mean, a World Series.
Well, yeah.
Statue.
But he's not saying.
Statue.
That's where I think it borders on absurdity. Because, not even borders on absurdity. This team is not winning the World Series.
Well, I agree.
David Ross as a manager, I'll allow that possibility. David Ross could be the manager of a Cub team that wins a World Series because if you're talking about the next 3 to 5 years, it's a long tenure for a manager. So I don't know how I don't think we have to have that conversation. I thought it was interesting beyond that kind of stuff that gets your eyebrows raised. The fact that he said the Cubs can contend this year with this team because of Swanson and some of the other guys and because of the presence of Rossi, that's interesting.
Bold prediction usually means it's probably not going to happen. Hey, let's make a bold prediction. So you come up with something that probably won't happen, and that's the Cubs contending for sure. This is the first year, because you kind of pointed out the pressure. Isn't this the first year that there's pressure on David Ross,
no,
except for maybe the first year?
No.
And there was a lot. No, I think there was pressure in his first year because he was trying to prove himself as a manager. He was trying to be their buddies because he was still their boy. Like, I still remember the first game that David Ross managed in. It was Kyle Hendricks, no fans in the stands. He's pitching his ass off, and David Ross goes out to the mound, and all the Cubs in the dugout are giving him crap and giving him a standing ovation. He was still one of the guys, and I thought that was a tough balancing act, which he may not have even passed his rookie year as a manager. But this is those last year and the previous year were lost seasons for the Cubs. This is the first year that there's pressure on him.
I understand what you're saying about 2020, but it seemed like there were such abnormal circumstances that – regardless of what happened and how he handled those situations, it was like you're starting over the next year anyway. So that was maybe good for experience, but it felt like an entire 60-game exhibition. I understand that it goes on the record and what happened that year, we kind of justified in our own minds.
Don't tell Jose Abreu it didn't matter that year.
I know. You know, that's a thing. That's a great point.
Right?
That's a great counter to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But doesn't it feel in our memory that we kind of made more of it than it was because we had to get through it?
It is. It's so weird to think back about it. It's weird to look at box scores. It's weird to open up David Ross's managerial record and look at that season and see 34-26.
It was a coping mechanism because we had to legitimize what we were watching.
Absolutely.
And why it was important.
It's amazing that we got through that. Like, we really stop and think about, like, no fans in the stands. Broadcasters at home or wherever they were broadcasting from. Just a bizarre time and a bizarre year that you're right. I don't know. I mean, here we are. This is the first time we've kind of started to put that 2020 season into perspective.
Yeah,
we knew
so.
This day would come.
Because you know that if it were a negative experience for David Ross as a manager, it would have been dismissed as, boy, you know, that was abnormal circumstances. You can't take anything from that because, mm-hmm. you know, how it was weird. It was just, we were all going through the same thing. So, Mark, I'm not dismissing what you're saying, but I think that I don't think there was that much pressure then as there is now. When you have a big ticket free agent at shortstop, veterans that were expensive to add to a roster, and the expectation is, as we heard Jed Hoyer say on this show 24 hours ago, playoffs. The Cubs should make the playoffs. If they don't, why don't they?
I think that they have to improve. I don't look at the goal for this Cubs season. Like, to me, it will not be disappointing if the Cubs don't make the playoffs. Of course, it'll suck. It's going to – you want your team to make the playoffs. Get all that. But this is the year to get – this is – to me, this is – my expectations for this season are more like 2015, actually, where – 2015, I expected the Cubs to be two or three games under 500, probably. And so if the Cubs do that, that's the kind of improvement that should be expected. The playoff talk is nice. I like the bold predictions. Cubs fans, I say greed is good in sports, but I don't think that that's the bar that Jed Hoyer is holding this Cubs team.
You know,
right.
Jed was talking yesterday, and he referenced 2015 with the Cubs, and he compared it to 2003 with the Red Sox, and he called both of those summers, both of those seasons, the year before the year, right? It was like, wait until next year, and they actually meant it, because in 2004, certainly the Red Sox ended the curse. Jed Hoyer, part of that front office. In 2016, the Cubs did that. In 2015 preceded that. 2003, the Red Sox come close, but they felt like they were on the verge of something. And he called it two of the most exciting summers he's ever been a part of, and seasons. You wonder, if you're right, Mark, and I'm not saying that I disagree with that, but when you put it in that context, this could be one heck of a fun year.
I mean, it could. I'm allowing for that possibility. The problem I have with like what happened in 2015, yes, the Cubs farm system is better now than it was. It's starting to get good again. But it wasn't like that, where you had the parade of players coming, Chris Bryant and Addison Russell, Kyle Schwarber comes up that year. I mean, we're not going to see like Brennan Davis and Jordan Wicks, whose name came up yesterday. Listen, PCA. Are we going to see
you're right about
march
that
of players to the big leagues?
I don't know, but you might see a procession of pitchers. I think they have invested their resources in the pitching infrastructure, their draft picks. You look at last year's draft and – what was it, 20 out of 21 players they selected were pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
They're going at this in that direction. So it might be a different method, but they might have in a different path, but they might change the journey and arrive at the same destination. So I don't know. We'll wait and see. That will be the fun of it. The other thing that comes to mind now when you're talking about how they're doing this and they don't have the same kind of minor league capital, if you want to call it that.
It's getting there, though.
Prospect capital.
It's getting there, yeah.
Tom Ricketts did a very interesting interview with Patrick Mooney in The Athletic. I would recommend Cub fans go to check it out. It referred to an offseason interview, so I don't know the timing of it. It doesn't sound like it was that recent. But in it, Tom Ricketts, I don't want to say criticized. That might sound over the story, but he was critical of the draft process, of the way the Cubs have drafted recently.
Previous to Jed Hoyer, you mean?
I think he used the word average. No, now. Recently.
Oh.
I think in recent years, I want to find out specifically during the break so we're not misrepresenting this, but he did use the word average and the way the Cubs have drafted in the same sentence and context, which was interesting to hear the chairman of the Cubs talk about the Cubs' drafts in recent years in that way.
Interesting. And I'm just looking at a text here, speaking of the draft picks. It says, I just hope PCA doesn't end up being another Corey Patterson. Seems awfully similar. I actually never even thought about that. I actually, who I think about, the better comp is Albert Almora, because that's what Almora was, the same like spectacular outfielder in the minors. He exhibited leadership skills, and the bat game was just lagging behind. I think I haven't looked at, you know, updated numbers or anything like that from PCA lately. Pete Crow Armstrong, by the way, might be a little too early just to be throwing PCA out there, but Pete Crow Armstrong, that's the comp that I get worried about, the Albert Almora one, because while Albert Almora was fine, he was a fine Cub.
He was fine.
He was not a starter for the Cubs.
You don't win the World
Cubs.
Series without him.
Right.
You don't win the World Series without him.
He stole second base.
Great. It was a big – don't just dismiss it like that, Grody.
Hey, I loved Albert Almora.
That was huge.
I've told the story many times. Albert Almora and I, my one thing with Albert Almora was getting lost with him at Dodger Stadium one day and making us both late, quite frankly, for the team bus.
That's a memory.
Yeah, that is a memory. So
I never saw Albert Almora or Corey Patterson catch a fly ball behind the back like PCA did.
Oh, man. But Albert Almora made a lot of really good defensive plays.
Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Let's squeeze in a phone call from Pal, who's in Palatine. Paul. Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Paul, can we call you Pal?
Good. No problem. You can call me anything. How
Thanks.
You guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Good. Hey, a couple observations. I didn't see the Cubs game, but I heard that was in 2 hours and 15 minutes, and I think the
– ooh, it's getting shorter.
Game was about
wow.
2:21.
So the Sox game was about 2:30, give or take, and again, I think that's going to be a huge improvement overall, and I think it keeps the players engaged as well, offensively and defensively, so I like that. Number two, for the White Sox, no one broke a hammy, or no one pulled a hammy, so that was a good accomplishment.
Isn't that sad? Isn't that the truth,
yeah,
man, that we have to put that and say, it's good that Yoan Moncada didn't strain something sliding into third on his ill-advised run to third base on that non-triple.
Absolutely. I was waiting for him to get up and grab the back of his leg. And so I think there's a lot of excitement, but I still think, at least with the Sox, there's still some holes in the major RBI role, like the three and the four hitter, where Vaughn and Jimenez are very good players. I just don't see them being long-term there. I really wish, you know, the Sox were committed to a World Series. I think they're just kind of treading water until the next generation or the next owners get in there as soon as they can. So I just don't see them making a huge run, but hopefully they'll be interesting to watch this year.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate the phone call. We'll see. They have a team they feel very good about, a manager they think is going to make an impact, and they go back at it tonight against the Astros. Lance Lynn, Christian Javier, they are going to be back at Minute Maid Park playing down in Houston. You know what else is going on in Houston, Mark Grody? The Final Four. And we're going to shift gears for a segment. We're going to talk to Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News when we come back. It's Final Four weekend here at The Score. We'll talk that when we come back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Mike DeCourcy talking college hoops with Mully and Haw. Sporting News college hoops columnist. Big Ten Network studio analyst. He's a Liverpool supporter, but we let him on anyways. Mike DeCourcy with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mark Grody in for Mully today. Time now to go out to our guest hotline presented by Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas. Circa Resort Casino, home of the world's largest sports book. That's where we find Mike DeCourcy down in Houston. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm well, David. How are you?
Doing well. So, obviously, in cities like Chicago, the Final Four, given who's involved, might not resonate the way past Final Fours have. And yet, in the sport, people who cover it, people involved in it, it's no less significant. And I wonder how you would describe the buzz around the Final Four and how it compares this year with past years where there might have been more recognizable names and faces.
You know, I think we could have brought Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, and UCLA to Houston, and the buzz would be less than it would be at a Final Four conducted in San Antonio, Indianapolis, or New Orleans. Just the nature of this city, Houston, spread out, maybe not super basketball centric. There was a lot of buzz in, or at least some, in Houston yesterday that I perceived that it was all toward opening day for the Astros. Just having it here changes the chemistry of the Final Four. This is the third time we're back since 2011. I don't 100% understand why they rush back here as quickly as they do. I meant the three cities I mentioned, all stage superior Final Fours, and Atlanta does too. I think Atlanta is probably a little bit overlooked in that mix. They were the ones who lost the Final Four in 2020. I just think you're not going to get much buzz in this town regardless of who's involved. But it does change. I understand, like, from a national perspective, the fact that San Diego State and Florida Atlantic and Miami are here in addition to UConn does change how it's viewed nationally.
Mike, Miami is my team. I am picking them to beat UConn. I am picking them to go to the final against Florida Atlantic and beat them. Please, please, please make a case for me on how Miami could beat UConn, even if you don't think Miami will beat UConn.
Well, the way they beat them is they spread the UConn defense out and they keep punishing it as much as possible. And they have to continue to do that even as the game stays close, say, or they have to make a run to get back in the game, say, as they did against Texas. That's the Miami superpower, is that their offense is exceptional and their confidence is beyond that. That's what Miami has that no one else has here, is that there's no question in my mind that they have a level of confidence and belief that even San Diego State doesn't match, that even UConn doesn't match. And that has to be what carries them, because if you're right, it will be by far the worst defensive team that's ever won the national championship. I just point you to Ken Pom, kenpom.com, and look at Miami's defensive rating per possession, the efficiency rating. There's never been a team like this. I don't think there's been a team like this. I'd have to look it up. That's even made the Final Four.
Wow.
But to win it, certainly not.
Man, it's just so perfect.
The last I looked, I'm sorry?
I was going to say, it's just so perfect for this Final Four that if they were to break through, we'd have to say, wow, that's a historically bad defense has won the national title. And it's just perfect for this Final Four with how wacky it's been this whole tournament.
The only winner that can emerge from this tournament and one not say, how did they do it with that, is UConn.
It
really is, because right. If San Diego State wins on Monday night, they'll be the worst offense that's won it, at least in the Ken Pom era, if not longer. Or Florida Atlantic, which is pretty good on both sides of the ball. But, you know, coming from maybe the 13th rated league, 12th rated league or something like that, a genuine mid-major league. Anybody but UConn, which has the usual components, the size component, the NBA talent component. They have at least one first-round draft pick, and I think Donovan Klingon, their backup big guy, will be a first-rounder either this year or next as well. They have that. They have the offensive and defensive efficiency component. So everything that usually comprises a champion, they've got it. The other three either have none of those qualities or only one or two.
Mike, every year, like whether it's the Final Four or the NCAA tournament, I kind of bristle a little bit when people look at the talent or on a team and they look at players and they evaluate them solely on, well, he's going to be a great NBA player, or he's a first rounder or a second rounder, whatever the case may be. I think college basketball is about having the right guy at the right time, and regardless of what their future might hold in the NBA. In that context then, and I don't know if you'd agree or disagree, but in that context, who's the best basketball player left in the Final Four? Who's going to be the guy who helps his team the most this weekend?
Well, first of all, I will say that it is wonderful. It is important to have great college players to win a national championship. But unless your great college player is Steve Alford, who's, according to my book 20 years ago, he's one of the 30 best college players of all time. Unless your guy is that guy, he better be a pro, because we haven't had any team win the national championship since 1987, Steve Alford in Indiana, that didn't have a first-round pick on it in its rotation.
Was Mateen Cleaves the first-round pick?
He was. He went to about 14th, I think, and that he wasn't the only one. Jason Richardson was a part of that team as well. So you have to have those guys. At some point, they're going to make a difference for you. But the best player the player that I have the most fun with, I mean, I think that Isaiah Wong is probably the best player. I mean, he got votes for Sporting News All-American and wasn't that far off the team. I don't think this is our first Final Four in the time that we have been part of the NCAA consensus, which started in 1998. We joined, we replaced the UPI and became part of the NCAA consensus at the Sporting News. In that period, there has never not been a Sporting News All-American at the Final Four. Most years we've picked three teams, some two, but there's never been, we've never missed a Sporting News All-American in that time, 25 years or so. And now this year we don't have any. So that says something about it. The player who I enjoy watching the most is Andre Jackson from UConn. He made a play against Gonzaga in the Elite Eight in the regional final, West Region final, that toward the end of the first half, I can't remember which one of his teammates tried to throw an entry pass from the left wing to the right post. Now, that is not a good idea. You've seen a quarterback try to throw across his body from the right side over to the left hash, and that usually gets picked off and often returned for a touchdown. Well, this is kind of the basketball equivalent of that. And Andre recognized it right away that that was not a great idea. So he dashed forward from the baseline and essentially intercepted the pass that was intended before a Gonzaga player could intercept it, and immediately redirected it to the right wing, where one of his teammates, Alex Caraban, was wide open, and he tossed in a three to extend their lead at halftime. That's the kind of play that Andre Jackson is going to make. He has a great awareness. He's a really dynamic player. He's become the primary point guard, although they play two at once and they share the duties a little bit. He's become the real leader of that offense and a big part of why UConn is here.
All right, Mike, before we let you go, two-part question. Number one, I want you to tell us who's going to win on Saturday or who you predict to win. And secondly, this rather relatively obscure Final Four field, and people are assigning or looking for reasons why they look at the transfer portal. And we're in the last day of March, and throughout this month, there's been over 1,000 players enter the transfer portal. Is this the new normal? Can every team look at it like, all right, well, we can be Florida Atlantic next year or San Diego State or whatever the case may be? Is this the kind of field that we're going to have to get used to because the transfer portal has changed college basketball?
I will be honest with you, and I will say that no. I mean, well, the one thing that sort of implies is that only a Miami or a San Diego State can take advantage of the transfer portal. Kentucky can too. Kansas can. And so it just comes down to selecting the right players and recruiting the right players and making sure they come to you and that they help you. Or there have been major powers that have gone into the transfer portal and failed. It's not like it's every player that comes out of that portal is going to magically be a wonderful player. There are players that have gone into the portal this week that no matter what program I was at, I would not want them on my team. They just at their last stop, they showed themselves to be too self-oriented that I don't care what their skill set says or whatever. And I don't want them. I don't want to take that player onto my team. So it's not like this magical thing. What has been kind of magical to some extent is that fifth year, that COVID year of eligibility, mm-hmm. we call it.
Yeah.
That's been the biggest difference in this tournament. Having what usually you have is 22, 23-year-old seniors playing against 18, 19-year-old freshmen at times. And the freshmen often come in with greater talent, but it gets somewhat evened out by the experience that is gained by the 22-year-old, 23-year-old senior. Well, when your seniors start being 24, 25, and in some cases even 26, that distance gets a little bit harder to cover for the freshmen. And I think that's part of why we've seen this. I'm not sure that we've had the best necessarily classes coming out in the last couple of years, 22, 23. This year's best freshmen were Brandon Miller, who was a first-team All-America talent, someone like that, but not a lot to go along with that in terms of achievement by freshmen. So I think that once we get back to having fewer of the super seniors or whatever you want to call them, when we have fewer of those, I think that the talent will maybe even it out a little bit, and we'll see teams like Duke and Kentucky have better seasons.
And your pick?
Yeah, I've picked UConn against San Diego State for Monday. Those things that I talked about, until I see those qualities that have been pretty much almost essentially unbeaten over the last 20 to 30 years, until I see that overturned, I'm going to stick with that. So I have UConn winning on Monday night as well. But, of course, in this tournament, usually what happens is you get two or three UConn-type teams here, and this is a question of which one does the best job with what they have. This time, it's all on the Huskies to hold up history. If anybody else wins, we're going to have a totally new precedent set.
Great work, Mike. Appreciate your time. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys.
Mike. Yep.
Mike DeCourcy from the Big Ten Network and the Sporting News, sportingnews.com. All his good stuff all week long covering the Final Four.
I love that stuff he was saying. How interesting about the portal players and the conceptually the idea that some coaches aren't going to want that because it says in the first place that you might be selfish. Oh, you want to come here because you want to be treated special. And then, yeah, that great point, too, about the pandemic extra year with some of these guys. That was very insightful.
San Diego State and UConn, I think, are the smart picks. I'm sorry, your Miami Hurricanes may be buying out.
Nobody's making a case for my Hurricanes.
No. You can if you want, but I think we'll go back to baseball. Did you hear what Roger Clemens said last night in the booth covering that White Sox game as an ex-Astro? Boy, could he be any more Houston presence in that booth? We'll talk about it next. It's Mullin Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Rhythm, baby.
Three, Cease is
That's
right.
Rhythm. It's hard to come get him right now. I'm going to be surprised.
I agree with you. The way that Alvarez has swung against Cease, last time 3-0 count, you saw right now what he did with Bregman. Pedro Grifols got a decision to make. Lefty on left, Alvarez is excellent.
What are you saying? Are you saying they're ignoring the propeller heads right now?
Wait a second.
Of course he thinks that they're propeller heads.
Mully Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's Mark Grody. He's in for Mully. Before that, it was the ESPN crew that included Roger Clemens. Roger Clemens in the booth. Roger Clemens as an analyst. What did you think of Roger Clemens weighing in on what was happening in a way? It took me a while to get used to it. Maybe he would grow on me, but it might take a while.
It's interesting, because he's just throwing stuff out there as if he's sitting in the dugout. There's no real presentation from Roger Clemens yet, but I kind of, it's just him sitting there spitting. You know what I mean? He's saying you got to get him off the fastball. You got to throw a couple pitches, get him off that fastball. Oh, you can't do that. You can't put that guy. You know what I mean? Like, he's just saying stuff the way a base grinder baseball player would say. If he tunes it up a little bit and turns it a little bit more into, you know, an actual explanation. But I kind of liked him just kind of throwing the little shots of Red Man here and there. Yeah. Little skull here for you. I don't know why I'm doing a chewing tobacco analogy, but I am. It's happening.
I guess I appreciated his unscripted, instantaneous kind of spontaneous reaction and response.
He wasn't thinking about what he was saying. He was just saying what was on his mind and just throwing it out there, just spurts.
Like when Ronaldo Lopez threw his first 300-mile-per-hour fastballs, and then he threw a breaking pitch, and he said, why would you throw a 90-mile-per-hour breaking pitch?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
More of that.
I kind of like
more
that.
More of that.
Like, that was kind of unique.
But
in
it
terms
felt
of-
like they had... Okay, if they were looking at Eduardo Perez as maybe the White Sox guy because of his best friend being the manager of the White Sox, it felt like Clemens was there to balance that because he was certainly the Houston Astro, the former guy, the Rocket Man. I mean, he was the organization that he represented for a long time.
Right, and he lost to that organization. He was on that 2005 Houston Astros roster that the White Sox pummeled in the World Series.
That's too provincial. In terms of looking at it that way.
I'm
not going full meatball, but I don't know that I really ended that broadcast wanting to hear more from Roger Clemens.
Extra point. Is ESPN trying to do with him what they did with A-Rod? And that is to kind of give him a platform, maybe help – Like, here is a platform. You can recover your image a little bit. So is that what they're doing with the Rocket Man? Extra point.
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think it's trying to.
You think it was just because it's Houston and there's Rocket Man?
I hope it's a one-time deal.
Oh.
Do you really want to see Roger Clemens in there? I guess he represented the Red Sox and Yankees. They're on a lot on the four-letter network. The Astros certainly will be. So he has three teams that he could lend some insight about playing for them, representing them. But I just don't know that what he had to offer is anything that I'm going to want.
Yeah.
Am I being overly critical?
Well, no, I'm trying to think of players that have done that.
644, 67, 67.
Hee-haw, Adam Wainwright. Remember when he stepped in out of
Did
nowhere?
Did you just call me hee-haw?
No. Actually, I was saying Adam Wainwright because hee-haw from It's a Wonderful Life. So I actually wasn't doing the haw thing.
I think you were calling me hee-haw.
No, I was actually making an out-of-season It's a Wonderful Life reference. Which I don't know if anybody can handle that driving around.
No, I cannot.
Do you get the reference or no? You have to have seen It's a Wonderful Life a lot of times to get the reference that I just made.
I kind of get it.
Hee-haw.
But anything, yeah. Any reference to Christmas beyond December 25th, 11:55 p.m.
is
way out of season for
totally
me.
Totally out of context. Yeah. You're right. It doesn't feel good at all.
You want more Clemens?
I thought it was interesting. I don't not want more Clemens. How about that? I was okay with it. I didn't think he was too intrusive. I thought Eduardo Perez was still clearly the primary guy. They had to prompt him every once in a while, like, hey, Roger, what'd you think of that? Or just make sure stuff was in his wheelhouse. I didn't think he was a detriment to the booth necessarily.
Okay. 309, Roger Clemens as Jeff Spicoli was quite a look from Peoria, Matt.
Wait, what was it? What was it?
Roger Clemens as Jeff Spicoli.
Oh, right. I knew that, dude.
I thought it was a little much. I'm okay with it, but it was maybe.
Hey,
how about
did you catch any of the Cubs three man booth?
Oh,
I don't know. I know you were out of the game, but I don't know if I did
get back. I did see some of that, and I thought that Joe Girardi was outstanding.
Yeah,
and
it was good.
You know, Boog and JD, we're all used to hearing them together. The addition of Joe Girardi, to me, as good of a manager, as accomplished as he is and was, he's a tremendous broadcaster.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's an asset to anybody who wants to put him in their booth. Marquee fans are lucky to have him.
Yeah, and it's not like this is – he was on the field managing last year, so his insight on players is not stale like sometimes it can be when an ex-player or ex-manager comes in. His stuff is very on spot.
219. Clemens was a chest pumper. He claimed to call his own pitches 95% of the time.
Oh, wow, because of everybody talking about Shohei doing that.
Yeah, and 815. I'm sorry, 219. Wait. I learned Clemens used his face to relay pitch signs to his catcher.
Mm.
He used face.
Like he just, facial like, gestures. He would just tick or something, like wink.
Facial expressions. Yeah, I thought he was very interesting. There was some good stuff. He used it. It didn't matter which
team
he went to.
Oh, you liked him. I'm surprised you liked him.
Yeah, I liked him. I liked it.
You want more Roger Clemens?
I want more of like the big name guys that I grew up watching calling games. I mean, Eduardo Perez, really nice guy, good broadcaster, but you couldn't. It would take me all day to figure out where he played baseball.
Doesn't matter.
Sure, it does.
You're not. No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
Doesn't matter. You're not.
When it's
you're
the national game, David,
you're not tuning in to find out where Eduardo Perez.
We're
going to
watch, but I'm talking about the masses are going to be brought.
You know
in.
What I'm going to watch? I want to watch to get smarter, to understand what's going on. He's going to help me understand that more than Roger Clemens grunting is. I don't know. I just think that Eduardo Perez. Maybe
it's nothing against Eduardo Perez. I'm talking about like on a game like that. I thought he added some value. Now it might get bad every Sunday. I don't know that I want him every Sunday night, but I thought for a special occasion, I thought he did pretty well for a guy that we haven't seen in that role.
You surprise me. I don't want to say you disappoint me, but you surprise me.
You surprise me every day. We are just so proud of you and what you've done.
Was that alarming, Mark?
No, your tone is not alarming today. At all. We are just, David, I think we ought to take him out sometime. I really do.
Hey, yeah. Post show?
Yeah, absolutely.
Want to go
Friday,
to Billy
right?
Goat? It's Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do
go
that.
Go down to Wildberry.
847, what did you guys think of Girardi saying that should the base runner take a bigger lead off the bag after the first throw to first base? He thought that was very insightful, and guess why wouldn't you do that? Joe Girardi, is Joe Girardi a big enough name, Dustin? Is that a big enough name? Did he have a good enough career for you to want to watch and hear what he has to say?
Yes.
Okay.
He has had a pretty big career.
David, with all due respect, okay, and you can be honest or not. You're a pretty honest guy from everything I can
pretty,
tell.
Pretty.
You're real. I should have said honest. You're a very honest
pretty
person.
Pretty honest. That was your gut.
Did you know, yeah. did you remember watching Eduardo Perez play Major League Baseball?
Not 1 minute.
Okay, thank you.
Not one at bat. I only know that his father is Tony Perez, correct?
I'd have to Wikipedia it. I mean.
And you know what? I don't care. I don't care.
IDC.
IDC, Grody.
Yeah.
I don't care if my broadcasters played or
as long as it's good.
My analysts.
Does it sound good?
I guess
you got a guy who could pronounce the Latin names correctly with a proper accent.
The pronunciation of Abreu.
Oh, it's
blew
awesome.
My mind.
I think that's really important, man. To have that. And I think it sounds cool.
It does sound cool.
It really
cool.
does.
All right. Maybe we need to continue this later.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk to Zach Zabin next, talking about tremendous broadcasters. He's one of them. He'll join us next. It's Mullin Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Extra point.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.